You are about to witness history in the making. Despite the world's highest living standards, the average American remained vaguely discontent, aware that his goal of a better way of life had still not been fully realized. There was something missing.
There's this awful gap in our lives just because we don't have... Oh, but why talk about it?
It's just that... Oh, I keep hoping someone can find a way to...
Don't be a fool, Mary. You know that's impossible.
Oh, I know. It's just that...
Gad, it's ironic. With all our technology and industrial know-how, we still don't have the one thing that could give us a better way of life.
It's the Forgotten Filmcast.
They say if you fall off a horse, you should get right back on as soon as you can, so you won't be afraid of horses.
Welcome to episode 217 of the Forgotten Filmcast. My name is Todd Liebenow, and thanks for joining me for this look at the movies that time forgot. On this episode, I'll be joined by Ricky Morgan from Dr. Movie to discuss a 1976 film that would be the final horror film from Britain's iconic Hammer Studios until the studio returned over 30 years later. Starring Richard Widmark, Christopher Lee, and Natasha Kinski, directed by Peter Sykes, it's To the Devil, a Daughter. But first...
What's having fun at parties got to do with...
The Forgotten Film Cast.
If you give me a chance, I'll show you.
For your convenience, we have an attractive snack stand with buttered popcorn, golden good and hot from the popper, sizzling hot dogs cradled in fresh, fluffy buns, ice cream, and other good things to eat.
It's intermission time, folks, so hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right over to our refreshment center for the most extravagant array of refreshment goodies ever assembled under one roof. Enjoy breathtaking, mouth-watering goodies, everything from a snack to a delicious full meal. At our refreshment center, you'll find a large variety of goodies to satisfy your hunger, your thirst, or your sweet tooth. So hurry, hurry, hurry. Visit our refreshment center now.
Drive away your worries and cares at this drive-in theater, where you will see the finest motion pictures of all time soon to be released. Drama, comedy, adventure, excitement, something for everyone. Here's a brief glimpse of some of the truly fine pictures we've scheduled in the near future.
I, Joe Delaney, will conjure up your light.
Who is in possession of Joel Delaney?
Supernatural city around us here. Spiritist churches, espiritismo seances, summoning the dead, bookeria, witchcraft.
We know all about Joel Delaney.
Joel, answer me, are you there? Joel? You know how Joel is. when his dark side shone.
Tell me what happened.
You tried to attack him, Angel.
Believe me, I don't remember any of that.
No!
All of a sudden, here we have a case just like three others we had last summer. Where is Mr. Delaney? Where is he, Mrs. Benson?
Possible that the people in my world can't get into your world, that no one will talk to them.
But are you willing to accept and believe what you're told? Are you going to listen?
Who is in possession of Joel Delaney?
But you have to believe. I feel that you don't believe. And you have to believe.
Are you trying to tell me that my brother is so weak and so vulnerable that he can be invaded from the outside by a maniac?
You must believe the possession of Joel Delaney.
Scream, run, hide. It is the time of absolute terror.
You will have a baby, a monster, an evil monster conceived in your womb, as big as I am small and possessed by the devil himself.
The devil within her.
She believes her child is possessed.
Yours is the professional practice as exorcism.
Not since Rosemary's baby, conceived by the devil.
I'm your mother. You can't hurt me. I know why you hate me. You didn't want to be born.
The devil within her. Rated R.
And now, on with the show.
Domini Domini Sancti Nostri, anima ipsa sanctificata est, et nostro Domino dedicata sit.
I name this child Catherine, and baptize her into the communion of our Holy Lord. May he cherish her and protect her, so that in due time, his great purpose and her great destiny shall together be fulfilled.
Who is this man?
Her husband. Have you killed her?
She died as she wished to die. You went nothing to her. And I will not have this sacrament profaned by any drunken tears. Look at me! There is nothing in you, Henry Bedders, of any strength or grace or value at all. Therefore, be grateful that you are the father of this child. Now turn and look behind you.
No, Henry. I don't want you to die. Take this. My element is fire. There's the emblem of fire. Never betray us, Henry. If you betray us, the pact will be put to fire, and fire will kill you in that same instant. Unless you can keep hold of the pact.
Okay, our movie this time is To the Devil, a Daughter, from 1976. And joining me to discuss this film is Ricky Morgan from Dr. Movie. Ricky, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me back. It's always a blast. You know, you kind of sent some ideas, and I was like, oh, yeah, let's tackle this one because, you know, Christopher Lee, you know.
I can't argue with that kind of reasoning because there are certain actors that, you know, just when you see that they're in a movie, you kind of go, I should watch that. And Christopher Lee is one of them. And I mean, the guy's made like what? 700 movies, so you know.
That's the catch to it too, is even as bad as it is, you still kind of watch it because he's in it.
exactly. Well, before we get to this movie, why don't you take a moment here, remind everybody a bit about who you are and what you do over there on your show.
Sure. Well, everything started with the Helming Power Hour, which is, it's kind of on, kind of off. Danny's my co-host on it is a very busy home life guy. So to fill the gap whenever we can't record, I've started a show called Dr. Movie, which is basically me talking about movies while I'm driving back and forth to work because I have a pretty large commute and I watch a lot of crap. And, you know, these are movies that necessarily wouldn't be on Helming because, you know, Danny's taste in movies is not as broad is mine. I'm trying to find the right word.
You're trying to find the right way of saying you'll watch anything? Is that what I'm hearing?
Not anything, but it does harken back. The whole idea is, remember going to the video store, for all you older folks, going to the video store and all those videotapes that you picked up and you looked at the artwork and you set it back down and you never watched it. This is that time to catch up on all those titles and say, I always wanted to see that because it looked interesting. And, you know, 9 out of 10 times, it does not live up to the artwork, but that's the fun of it.
Well, I was going to ask, I mean, you know, kind of what guides you when it comes to deciding what movies you're going to cover? Is it the artwork? Because I can relate to that, you know. I mean, when you think back to those video store days, there were always those great covers, and you would go, wow, that looks amazing, and then half the stuff that's on the cover isn't in the movie, but, yeah. You know.
Yeah, well, that was kind of the premise of attacking it in that forum. And I used, believe it or not, I'd say 95% of the stuff that I cover on the show is on Tubi. Uh-huh. And, you know, of course, Tubi has that recommendation thing. So when you pick something that you're like, yes, I want to watch this because I remember seeing this on the shelf back in the day. And then it gives you 15 other movies that are in the same category. So you just load up your queue with all these movies. And I do take requests. So people say, hey, have you seen this? Have you seen this? Which has led to some really obscure, interesting choices that I'm like, wow, I can't believe I've never seen this because this is actually decent, even though it's, you know, real low budget and stuff. Mm. So it's a whole lot of fun. Episodes are only about 15 to 20 minutes long. So I don't, you know, it's very short because I'm driving. You know, it's hard to read a synopsis and drive at the same time. You know, and I'm on episode 308. I dropped it today. Awesome. Yeah. So yeah, I'm cranking them out.
yeah. Well, I you mentioned Tubi. I mean, I feel like I'm singing the praises of Tubi every other week on this show. It feels like half the movies that we talk about here on the Forgotten Filmcast, you end up being able to find on Tubi. It's just amazes me. There's movies that pop up on there that I thought, well, we're never going to see a release of that, or that's stuck on VHS, or, you know, it's been 30 years since I even thought about that movie. And it just amazes me all the stuff that shows up there. It is just a treasure trove. And yeah, I will sit through the commercial for drivetime.com 17 times if it means getting to see some movie that I wouldn't get to see otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, and the things that pop up too, because I just watched a movie called Zombie Death House. Never heard of it. Clicked on it because I saw a name, John Saxon. I was like, that's all I need. Oh, it's kind of like Christopher Lee, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, lo and behold, did he even directed this movie, and it's a like shot on video movie. And I was like, you know, besides it only having, you know, minimal budget, it's actually a pretty decent little film. Uh-huh. It's not a zombie movie. It's not a death house movie. It's, I don't know what you call it, but it was good.
It's got John Saxon. So yeah, there you go.
All right. That's all you need.
Now, I know you cover a lot of different things on your show, but I have noticed from time to time you hit on the films from Full Moon Entertainment. And I'm always like, oh, yeah, remember those, you know? I mean, you got a thing for Charles Band? I mean, what's going on here?
Well, again, it's harkening back to seeing these on the shelf and not picking them up. Because when you see a movie called Head of the Family, you know, and you look at it and you're going, yeah, I don't know. Now's the time because you can watch it for free on Tubi. Yeah. And, you know, and it just makes for a fun show. You know, who doesn't want to cover Seed People, you know? But, yeah, I mean, it's that thing again. You pick one. And it gives you a list of, hey, here's the other 48 Full Moon pictures that's on here. And you just start popping them in your catalog. And I really have not put in the movies in any kind of order. They are just when I liked them and put them on the queue, that's the way they are. And that's the way I'm going through them. So,
Yeah. And there's like, you know, how many Puppet Masters and Evil Bongs, you know, they just keep making those things.
Subspecies. So, yeah. So, and I haven't worked into a lot of those yet. I'm trying to build up the courage. Doing series like that is kind of tough because you're usually good for one or two, and after that, you're wanting to tap out, you know?
They start to blur together, you know? I mean, even
do one or two and then come back to them later on. That might be the better approach. I don't know.
I mean, even A-list franchises blur together. I always say I can't tell one Bourne movie from another because they just all feel the same to me. But yeah, I suppose Puppet Master might be the same way. Well, you've been on the show several times in the past, but I think this is the first time we've done a horror film with you.
Yeah.
And I mean, are you a big horror guy, would you say?
Oh, yeah. That was the starting point for even the Hell Ming show is, you know, those B movies, Evil Dead, and you can see the Phantasm poster behind me here in the shot. I mean, those are my favorite franchises. So, but my favorite is the Italian Giallo series, the Argento stuff. And that's my stuff, you know.
There's some wild things there. And I mean, the more that I have exposed myself to Giallo over the last several years, it amazes me then when I run across things in, you know, contemporary American films, and I'm going, oh yeah, look at that. That's from that other movie or that. And, you know, there's some crazy things in there. There's stuff that's, you know, kind of unlike anything you've ever, you know, seen before in that genre, you know, and that's the thing. That's why we keep watching movies, you know.
That's it. That's the whole premise of me being a movie fan is, all right, show me something I haven't seen before, right? Don't even have to be in a great movie. Just show me something that goes, that's interesting. And you're right. You'll see a lot of shots that 20, 30 years later, they're just copying it and using it in a new movie because they knew even back then this was, you know, the popcorn shot or whatever you want to call it, you know, from that time period. And it kind of hurts a little because you say, hey, you really need to go back and watch where it came from. But, you know, it's all good.
Yeah. Well, let's get to this movie that we have here today. It's called To the Devil, a Daughter. It's from 1976. It's directed by a gentleman named Peter Sykes, who is an Australian director. Though he's mainly known for his involvement in the British film and TV industry, directed a number of horror films, including a number of films for Hammer. Demons of the Mind is one of them, and The House in Nightmare Park as well. But he didn't just stay in horror. He also directed some comedies. He did the film Steptoe and Son Ride Again, which, of course, Steptoe and Son was the British TV series that inspired the American sitcom Sanford and Son. Is a big deal there. Now, this movie, though, it's based on a novel by Dennis Wheatley, who is an author known for works that have kind of an occult theme to them. I guess from what I've read, he wasn't too happy with this interpretation of his book. We might get there more as we go. But speaking of Hammer films, mentioned a moment ago, we need to mention that this was a co-production between the German company Terra Films and, of course, Britain's famous Hammer Productions. And in fact, this was the last horror film that Hammer released until the studio came back here in the 2000s and started releasing movies again. So this is, you know, I guess either a big exit or a fizzle, depending on how we feel about the film, you know. Anyway, this film, it deals with an American writer living in London named John Verney. He's played by Richard Widmark. And one night at the release party for his latest book, he is approached by a strange man named Henry, played by Denholm Elliott. Yeah. And he asks Verney to pick up his daughter, Catherine, at Heathrow Airport. Now, Catherine is played by Natasha Kinski. She is about to turn 18, even though I think the actress herself was only about 15 when this was made. Thing is, though, she has spent her whole life being raised by a group known as the Children of the Lord. And they are led by an excommunicated priest named Father Michael, played by Christopher Lee. Now, Henry, he tells Verney that, you know, this group, oh, it's actually a satanic cult, and he is wanting to save his daughter from it. You need somebody to swoop in there and rescue her. So Verney agrees to this, despite the concerns of his agent, played by Honor Blackman. But Verney figures, hey, you know, this might be good material for my next book. I'm going to do this thing. He goes to the airport and finds the girl. She's actually dressed as a nun and being escorted by one of the other cult members. So Verney manages to snag the girl and takes her back to his home for safekeeping. Of course, the Satanists, they're not going to give up that easily. They set out to get her back and to kill her father, Henry. Meanwhile, there are strange things happening with this girl. She spends the first night that she's there basically wriggling and screaming in bed, while at the same time we see a woman with Christopher Lee and the other cult members who is giving birth to something we can't see, but which seems to be horrible because everybody is reacting in these horrified expressions. Long story short, it seems that this girl factors into Father Michael's plan to provide a vessel for a demon called Astaroth to inhabit, and then he's going to, I guess, rule the world as demons want to do. So it's up to this writer to save the girl and stop the Satanists. Now, this is definitely another film that was trying to capitalize on the success of movies like Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist and The Omen. I think you can see elements of all three of those films in this one. And strangely, we've talked about a number of these kind of films that came after those films here on this show. I mean, in recent memory, we talked about The Manitou, which is definitely kind of in the same vein. And, oh, there was something else. We've done a number of these Exorcist, Omen ripoffs. Oh, Holocaust 2000 with Kirk Douglas. We talked about that one fairly recently as well. So, yeah, for some reason, we keep hitting these Satanic Panic movies on this show. But I'm going to let Ricky get us started here. Give us a few of your thoughts on To the Devil a Daughter.
Well, you know, the fact of that this was the, no pun intended, the nail in the coffin for Hammer. I mean, the company was pretty much over at this point already. Surprisingly, this thing did pretty decent at the box office versus the other stuff that was coming out. And they're like, man, you know, if they would have made this movie 10 years before, this would have kept things rolling, I believe. Overall, I mean, there's a lot to unpack with this movie. But I'm going to go ahead and say this is the best looking. This could be my favorite Hammer film. Because the rest of them feel more like a, you know, on-set, staged type scenario, where this is more open. You've got different locations. It's shot really well.
It is shot well. I'll give it that.
And it's the story gets confusing because they had to leave a bunch of stuff out. The ending of it is terrible. And I did some research on that, too, and they said that, again, to save money, they couldn't do what was supposed to happen. Or Christopher Lee was supposed to have a different kind of demise at the end, and they thought it was too similar to another character that he used to play in Hammer, and a death that character had, so they just totally cut it out of the movie and said, I will just hit him in the head with a rock. But yeah, I mean, the scenes of, like you were saying, when she's laying there asleep, and she is I guess subconsciously there with that woman that's having the baby and the people that are around her, and they're taking the baby and they're putting that kind of incubator looking thing. This has got everything you expect from, like you said, the Satanic Panic movies. But if somebody would have handed me this and me not see the credits, I would not have said that this was a Hammer film.
I didn't realize it was a Hammer film until I started watching it. It's a title that I'd seen pop up on various services over the last many years and thought, oh, well, that looks interesting. I'll check that out someday. And just had never gotten around to it. It's a movie that, I mean, as I watched it, there were certainly things that I found intriguing about it. I won't say that I was wowed by it initially. I did kind of, as I was, thinking it over, I went back and watched some scenes. There were some things that I thought, okay, there is something here maybe I missed the first time around. But on a whole, I don't know, there were kind of thinking about some of those other films that are trying to capitalize on the things like The Exorcist, The Omen, Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
This one didn't grab me as much, and I think maybe part of that might be some of the casting things. We'll get more into that a bit here. I think it's very uneven casting. in general, I think there's a lot of kind of slow moments to this. You do get some big moments at times, but they didn't leave like the mark for me like, some of those memorable moments in, something like, say, The Exorcist or The Omen.
Right.
There's no moment that's like David Warner's head getting lobbed off.
Right.
makes you go, wow,
That goes back again to the budget that they had, because the director, he said, when he finally read it, he said, I looked at the script and I said, this is unshootable. He said, we're not going to be able to capture any of this stuff in the movie because we don't have the budget to make that happen. Mm-hmm. So, shoestring budget, they tried to get Ken Russell to direct.
Yeah.
Now
that would have been something.
Yeah, for sure. And this thing went through a lot of, the heart was just barely beating at this point. And for them to get the cast that they did is kind of a surprise, being all the issues they had. I don't know if you've seen a bunch of behind the scenes stuff on this, but things got pretty squirrely with the main character.
I think I saw that Richard Widmark kind of didn't, cut partway through the film, kind of decided he didn't want to do this film anymore and made things difficult and tried to quit many times. And yeah, I mean, something like that is definitely going to cast a certain shadow on your movie, for sure.
What I saw from a company, and I don't know if the exterior, companies involved had any kind of influence, but to me, I just saw some growth, because it got to where all the stuff Hammer was doing was really kind of hokey. It was kind of lacking what made them great to begin with. They took all the Universals and turned them into classics again.
Mm.
And then they just started losing their way, and it became more skin flicks. I mean, you had to have the sex appeal and all that stuff. And they kind of lost their way there for a bit. And this one, I think, is just too late. It's almost a return back to serious filmmaking and not making it kind of hokey. It just lacked a lot of things that they had to leave out because they couldn't do. And going back to the author, he loved Devil Rides Out, which he feels like they nailed that, basing it off his book. And they said, you captured it. So he gave Christopher Lee the right to make any of his other stories in the movie. And that's how this happened. And this is what we got.
And I think I saw that he was so unhappy with this version that he said to Hammer, you can't take any more movies. Don't make any more movies based on my work.
Broke him after one. So.
But yeah, I mean, it is interesting to look at this in the context of the films that Hammer is more known for. I mean, like you were saying, those earlier Hammer films, they are, a lot of them are period pieces. You have that feeling that you're on a soundstage, you're in a creepy old castle set for half the movie, I love that stuff. There's a certain charm to that, but here we are now many years removed from that. And they're trying to be more in the real world. They're trying to give us that, that feel of there's horror going on just down the road from you, like you were seeing in something like Rosemary's Baby or whatever. Right. And so it is a little bit jarring just, you know, when we think of, well, what we expect from a Hammer film, to see this one where it's not that same kind of feel.
Right, right. And then again, you got to remember, my opinion of this is based off of, I've just watched a movie called Robo Shark. So I'm like, yeah, man, it's pretty good. No, I mean, I think there was actually, I mean, it's the little engine that could, you know, it's really trying to make a quality product with what it's been handed, and it just falls short. But it's got some moments. And again, I have to say the director, I think, did pretty good with what he was handed. So, that's kind of where I stand on it. They did try to get Klaus Kinski to be in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
We didn't need that.
Well, believe me, I did not miss the irony in the fact that we have a movie called To the Devil, a Daughter, and the quote unquote daughter of the film is the daughter of Klaus Kinski.
Yeah.
Universally recognized as an awful person.
Wow. So. Psychopath. Yeah.
I do want to dig more into the cast here in a moment, but kind of to jump back to the crux of the story. And at one point you did say you got a little confused at times and things.
And there was a few times, yeah.
I did have quite a bit of confusion throughout this film. I think part of it too is just the way that the storytelling unfolds. They do kind of beat around the bush a lot here. They never take a moment to make it terribly clear to you what Christopher Lee's plot is all about here. We kind of know, all right, the Satanists want this girl. Why do they want the girl? I mean, they had the girl. They lost the girl. They need her back. Why do they need her back? We don't know. How's that all work?
Right.
It's not really spelled out for us. We start to get little pieces, but it's just little bits. And you know, we're trying to piece it together. And at times I found myself getting more frustrated than anything because I was like, the jigsaw puzzle is not matching the picture. You know, and I was struggling with it a bit.
I think, of course, you know, grew up with the slow burn movies, so it really didn't bother me too much. But to me, it kind of spelled it out even from the beginning, because when you see Christopher Lee and he's dressed like a priest, he's got nuns, all this stuff set up, it's like, wow, it's hidden in plain daylight what these people are, right? I mean, I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but, you know, the false prophets, man. I mean, you know, we see them every day. It's that obvious. They are out there. They just look like everybody else. Mm. So be careful who you're listening to, right? And, you know, I think that kind of jarred me at first, because I'm like, okay, I thought Christopher Lee was the bad guy here. Well, yeah, he is, but he's just like a priest. He's in a church. He's standing in front of Christ. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that is intriguing about that, and I do agree that this is one of the elements of the film that I thought was really effective, was the idea that even though Christopher Lee has been excommunicated in that first scene of the movie, as things go on, we see that he has basically said, okay, well, if the church has rejected me, I'm going to go off and do my own thing that I feel is what is right. You know, I feel like this is the true path. And this girl that they have raised up for this purpose, as the movie unfolds, there's kind of questions that come up about, well, how much does she know about what their plot is? How much is she in on this? How much does she agree with this? And we start to kind of see that she's on board with this. And it's because she's raised in this, and that's all she knows. This is what she believes to be right and true.
Well, there's a twist to that, too, because they talk about her being raised in isolation.
Mm.
So, you know, they talked about that, you know, when they take her and they put her in isolation. So she really has no input. So she doesn't know the whole story till he tells her before the ceremony is about to start.
Right.
These weird things start happening because, you know, they know how to tap into her psyche or whatever. But there's a lot of innocence in that. And I think that's where they were trying to go with, same thing with The Exorcist, you know, Rosemary's Baby, that innocence of not knowing what you're dealing with. Yes, she was born into it. It was a pact, you know, that she would be born, and 18 years later, she would be sacrificed for the bringing of the demon to the earth, you know. Well, sacrificed in a weird way. She becomes the demon, actually.
Right, so, right.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. It's just not done well. And those pieces are scattered throughout the entire movie, and it's trying to put them together. I think it's, like you said, it gets you a little frustrated.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, I've seen worse.
Well, when it comes to kind of the moments, I mean, we talk about horror movies and especially these kind of satanic panic type of movies, there's the moments that jump out. I mean, what are the moments, you know, when it comes to the horror of this film that stick out?
It's got to be the dream, consummation, I guess, of some of it with Christopher Lee naked.
That's the nice way of putting it, yeah.
Christopher Lee with a gold face, like he just stepped off the cast or the off the stage of Excalibur. And then it flips to where she's got the mask, and then there's the statue above that's the, you know, inverted cross, but the guy doing the Gymkhana on it.
Nice reference back to a previous episode that you were on there. Yes, Gymkhana. Well,
maybe a Jean-Claude Van Damme stance. I don't know. It's one of the two. But, yeah, I mean, you know, there's some weird. And again, Ken Russell, if he got a hold of this, ain't no telling what we would have got.
Oh, yeah, it would have been off the charts.
Yeah. But, you know, it's got those things. And then you've got the scene where, and again, I don't know if it's a dream or if it's really happened, but where the baby crawls up to her on the bed thing. And you're like, is this a Black Sabbath album cover? I'm kind of confused here.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because when I saw that scene and we finally get a look at this baby, because, I mean, kind of to set it up a little bit, we've seen this birth scene intercut with Natasha Kinski. You know, she's all disturbed and screaming and stuff. And we keep cutting back and forth to this birth scene. And we don't actually see the baby being born. We just see these other people that are there with Christopher Lee, and they're all looking all horrified and all that kind of stuff. And we're like, all right, something terrible just was born, except Christopher Lee is sitting there grinning, you know, and he's like, you know, he's enjoying this. Everybody else is horrified. Christopher Lee is grinning about it. Then from there, they're carrying around this incubator the whole time. We're going, okay, whatever was born was in this incubator, but we still don't see it. And eventually we do see this thing. And like you said, every time we see it, we're going, is this real? Is this a dream? What? Because I think first time we see it, like, in a mirror.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's like a hallucination in a mirror. And then there is this bizarre sequence, which, yeah. I mean, yeah, is it a dream or whatever, where we see this thing crawling up on Natasha Kinski. And it looks like he's trying to crawl in
back in
inside,
get
near the womb, you know, something like that. But we see this thing, and it looks like the little devil baby on the cover of that Black Sabbath album, Born Again.
Born Again.
You know, it's like that mixed with a naked mole rat, something like that. And it's the strangest looking puppet thing that you've ever seen. It is quite shocking, because we see this and we go, what is that? You know, but yeah, every sequence where we see this thing, we're going, is this real? Is this a dream? What am I supposed to think about all this?
I tell you, another scene that really drew me in and I was kind of amazed by it is when the lady is draining herself dry of blood.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, wow, this is actually, I mean, you just think of somebody cutting the wrist and letting bleed out, but this lady is actually pumping till she can pump no more, and it's like, wow, this works. I mean,
yeah, it's a disturbing scene.
It really is.
I mean part of the whole idea of this, you know, what they're doing and you know what, you know, is going to eventually bring about this demon taking over the young girl's body, all that kind of stuff, it has to do with there's a baptism of blood that has to happen, and so there's just constantly this theme of, you know, we've got to get blood type of a thing going on. And this is bloody. I mean, you know, it's, you know, Hammer films, again, talking about the comparison between this and the older version of Hammer, it does kind of feel like they're trying to play catch up here. We're in the 70s, and, you know, things have gotten bloodier, things have gotten more violent. And, you know, when I think of Hammer horror films, one of the first things that comes to mind is the blood. I always think, when I see that bright red blood, I always call it Hammer blood, you know, and there's way more of it in this movie than you see in those other films. You get in a, you know, an old Dracula movie, you just get fleeting glimpses of it, but it's jarring because it's that bright red Hammer blood. Here you've got the bright red Hammer blood and you've got gallons. And, you know,
Hammer was the house that dripped blood, right? I mean, that's the studio that dripped blood. I mean, that was kind of they were the gore of the time. But then you had, you know, George Romero and everything happened since then. Yeah, they're playing catch up. So, yeah, catch up.
And you could say the same thing, too, about the nudity. I mean,
yeah, you're right. Well, and that's what I mean. That's what I mean by them kind of losing their way. It's like they had to start going for the cheap thrills to make their movies palatable, because that's, I mean, drive-in theaters, that's, you know, movies were getting sluttier. I mean, that's just kind of where things were going in the 70s. I mean, so, yeah, you felt like you had to do that too. And I think that's what made this one different for me, because it wasn't, yeah, you still got some nudity, but it wasn't played, only one scene was played for enticement, which she was not even really there. The rest of it is based off of, hey, we're having a baby here, but I don't know. Again, that just felt different to me than, you know, Ingrid Pitt running around with her, you know, cleavage hanging out.
Well,
fine with me, but.
Well, that one scene that you're talking about is certainly a controversial aspect of this film, because we do have a brief moment in the big conclusion of the movie where Natasha Kinski is completely without clothing. And like we said, she was 15 years old when she made this movie. And I guess you were talking about Klaus Kinski before. I guess, you know, one of the quotes I read was like, yeah, I don't have any problem with being in a movie where my daughter gets completely naked.
Yeah.
It's like, again, Klaus Kinski, great guy, you know.
And also, and this brings up a question too, because not what we're talking about right here, but there's something I still don't understand. Because if the first lady is having the baby and it is our Black Sabbath baby, Christopher Lee sacrifices a baby outside for the drenching of the blood on the girl.
I assumed it was the same baby, but
the baby that's hanging up, you can see a leg and it's like a normal baby. So I don't know. You know, there's another thing there that's kind of so also they had to come up with, hey, this lady that pumped all of her blood out, we forgot to write it in the script what we're doing with it. They decided, hey, we'll just pour it on that, you know, rock circle there and that'll be his barrier. And I mean, they just had to make this stuff up. So,
and that's the thing. I mean, I always, when I watch these type of movies, I always kind of wonder, is that a real thing, or is that just, you know, they made it up for the movie? Which, I mean, I don't really want to know if it's a real thing, because this kind of stuff, like if there's people really doing this stuff, it's like, I don't want to know about that. That's
true.
That's disgusting, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm always kind of wondering, all right, is that a real symbol? I mean, like you were talking about the Jean-Claude Van Damme guy. I was like, is that a real thing? I don't know. Yeah. You know, I don't know.
Supposedly Weaver was an expert on all this stuff. And, you know, they said that a lot of his stuff that he wrote in his books was pretty factual. But I think that's why he got mad, is because they just took everything that was probably factual in this story and just said, yeah, we're not doing that. We're going to paint some China, or paint some gold, paint some ugly faces on them, and Christopher Lee's going to talk to them.
they did look like paper plates that had been spray painted gold. I was going, this ceremony is not all that impressive here, you know. Talk about low budget. But I mean, talking about kind of the fact that the author was supposedly an expert on all this stuff or whatever, this is one of those movies where you watch it and the lead character, you kind of think, all right, well, clearly this is supposed to be a surrogate for the author himself. He sees himself as this guy, you know, kind of he's an expert on this stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
But I was kind of like, I never got the impression that Richard Widmark's character was that much of an expert, because it didn't feel like he took all the opportunities to show his expertise or to, you know, intervene in whatever ways. He kind of seemed to fumble his way into some of the knowledge at points in this, you know.
And it may be pointing the finger at, here's a guy that writes these books for a living based off of what artifacts he can find, and he's probably just checking the wind to see which direction it's blowing, and that's what he's writing down. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe saying, everything you've based your career on was fake. What you're getting into now is real. So everything that you know, you actually know nothing. But the beauty of this movie is everything happens in the last, I don't even think it's 5 minutes, because he goes to the church and reads the book, and it instantly tells him, hey, if you take a rock and get somebody's blood on it and hit Christopher Lee in the head, you win.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, he read that whole book, and that's what he got out of it.
Well, and I mean, that brings up an interesting point. The last, I mean, let's call it 10 to 15 minutes of the movie, to be generous here.
If that, yeah.
They definitely kind of, like, yeah, a bunch of things fall into place, and they just pile up a bunch of the memorable moments. I mean, like we said, you know, these movies kind of depend on having those wow moments. And a lot of this movie is kind of dry, but when we get to that last 15 minutes or so, I mean, you get a guy that gets engulfed in flames, you get the whole blood ceremony thing, you get the little Black Sabbath creature, you get, you know, all that crazy stuff happening right within that last bit of the movie, and then we're done.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like they just save it all for the end there.
It's basically the story of, oh yeah, you think you're tough? Well, here, and he draws a line in the ground and says, bet you won't cross that line. Okay, I'm going to back up. Bet you won't cross that line. I mean, it's basically what happens.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
This circle with blood will protect me. Yeah, but this rock has different blood on it, and it surpasses your blood.
It's like, what? And it's a rock. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you hit someone with the head in a rock, you know, yeah, bad things happen.
So tell me, did you expect kind of those the trick endings of these times too, where he pulls her out and thinks she saved the girl, but deep down something may still be going on?
Oh, yeah, the kind of the end question mark type of an ending. Yeah. I mean, I kind of figured it had to go that direction.
But there's nothing there. It's just the end.
Yeah, you know, I was sure that she was going to, like, I don't know, you know, save her and give an evil look, or even like do something, you know, break his neck, I don't know what, you know, something like that at the end to give us that spectacular ending that makes us think, oh yeah, evil actually won in the end.
Yeah.
You know, something like
He picks her up and he carries her across and he looks down at her, and then you get the screen that says, hey kids, don't play with evil stuff, and that's it, you know.
Yep. Well, before we kind of start wrapping things up here, I like I said, I do want to dig into the cast a bit.
Yeah.
You know, like I said before, I think things are a little bit uneven here. And I think for me, that's mainly because I found Christopher Lee so interesting and Richard Widmark so boring. But I'll let you share your thoughts first.
No, absolutely true. But the guy that plays the father.
Denholm Elliott. Yes.
He's great. I mean, the whole scene where he's at home and he shoots the other guy that's coming in from the cult, him drawing the pentagram on the floor and trying to protect himself, and he's wigging out. I thought he was great.
Denholm Elliott has a wonderful, just nervous energy through this whole film, which, I mean, I can't say I blame him.
Yeah, right.
you're going up against a bunch of Satanists led by Christopher Lee. I'd be nervous too. But he's got this wonderful look on his face. He's got the bug eyes going on, this twitch. I mean, he's almost got like the Herbert Lom in a Pink Panther movie type of twitch going on in his eye. And just his kind of feeble attempts to kind of try to do whatever he can to protect himself, even when he doesn't seem like he really believes it that much. Like, he does the whole thing, like you're saying, with the pentagram and whatnot, don't go into the circle, all this kind of stuff. You know, they disturb the powder or the ink or whatever it is he's got on the floor there. And he's like, oh no, and he's got to go draw it back. You know, it's chalk. That's chalk. That's what it was. Yeah. He's got to redraw it with chalk. And, you know, it's like you're going, well, he doesn't actually believe any of this stuff. He's just like, well, I'm going to grab whatever I can and hope for the best.
You got to go get my pact. I was like, why didn't you open it? You know where it is.
And that was another one of those things that was like, why was that just thrown into the last 15 minutes of the movie? It's like it should have been kind of a bigger quest of the movie, I guess. If it was that important, you know, why did we just say, oh, okay, go get this. So they go and get it, and the guy bursts into flames, and that's about the only reason we need that that whole device.
His dead wife come back and visit him, though. That was I mean, I almost got the original Nightmare on Elm Street vibes, you know, where the girl's in the body bag, that kind of feel. I was like, wow, that's actually pretty decent. So
yeah,
it doesn't really pay off well, but visually I was like, okay, I'm with this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she hands that necklace or the pact to that guy, and he just poof up in flames. It's like, wow, all right.
Well, and like I said, too, I mean, Christopher Lee, he is a reason to watch just about anything. And regardless of how the rest of this movie goes, he definitely makes it interesting. He is a treat to watch. It's great to see him doing the evil thing. You know, I mean, if you want to have an evil priest, I mean, this is the guy to do that kind of thing. And it's great because he gets to be creepy and charismatic. You know, that's the thing. That's one of the great things about Christopher Lee in general when he does these horror films, is that he gives you the creepy, but he makes you love him still because he's just so darn charismatic. And I mean, there's always going to be a bit of similarity from one role to the other here. I mean, as I was thinking of it, I was like,
the man with the golden face.
I didn't think of that, but that's a good comparison there. But the vibe he was given struck me a bit kind of similar to what he gives in The Wicker Man, where, he's this mysterious figure who's just kind of got his own agenda, his own world that he's in. And, you know, he's just going to do every creepy thing he can, you know. So, I mean, he's a treat. He's a treat in this movie.
Yeah.
Richard Widmark, on the other hand, was like stiff as a board. He was completely uninteresting. And, you know, when I read that he was not thrilled with being in this movie, that he tried to get fired a few times, I was like, well, you can kind of see that on the screen here. Yeah. He's just like a deer in the headlights half the movie.
Yeah. Hammer had a bad history of hiring anybody from the U.S. to be in their movies. It just did not work out.
I will say, though, Natasha Kinski, I thought she did a solid job in this. Yep. I mean, in a role like this, you need somebody that can kind of give you that bit of innocence, but also give you the creepiness. I mean, again, think like what Linda Blair gives you in The Exorcist, that type of thing. And I think she does a solid job here. It's not the flashiest role. It's, you know, it's not as intense as like Linda Blair in The Exorcist or even Mia Farrow in Rosemary's Baby. But for what it is, I think she delivers.
Yeah, I mean, you get the couple that comes over to stay with her while he goes out and tries to figure things out. And, you know, she gets woken up by Christopher Lee in a spell type dream, and she puts on her nun outfit and goes stabs a woman. I mean,
yeah,
you know, and then just sneaks out the window. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Well, the most ridiculous scene of the whole movie for me was when, you know, when she goes out and she's wandering around the town and such, and Widmark has been out, you know, trying to investigate some things, and he comes back and he sees her out wandering around, and he's like calling to her, Catherine, and then she goes off and he's got to chase her down, but the little drawbridge thing isn't across the river, and he's got to go and crank the thing, and it's like, are you kidding? That would take like 20 minutes to crank that thing. And then he catches up to her in 30 seconds.
Well, she's wandering aimlessly. I mean, you know, she's freaked out and the camera work's all real shaky and she's looking around. So, you know, she's kind of in a daze. And, you know, she's running in a skirt. So, you know,
yeah. Oh,
a long nun outfit. So not very aerodynamic, you know.
No. All right. Well, before we take it to the break then, just any closing thoughts you've got on this one?
I think if you're a horror or a Hammer completist, I think you need to see it. If you are into, you know, closing out genres, this is definitely in the satanic panic. I say give it a shot. I mean, it's got some interesting stuff in it that I think at the end of the day, even though the movie's not great, you're still going to walk away with a couple of scenes that stay with you. Mm-hmm. So it did something. I mean, I can't say that about a lot of other stuff I watch. So, I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it is an interesting watch. I mean, like I said, when I first sat down with it, it didn't grab me as much as I had hoped.
Right.
But I did kind of revisit some things. I think as I sat and thought about it more, there were some things that kind of started to gel. And I was like, all right, it is trying to do something interesting here. It doesn't succeed on every level. There's, some things that definitely overshadow others in this movie. When you've got somebody that commands the screen like Christopher Lee does, you're going to get certain things that you can grab onto, but I can't say that the rest of the movie necessarily lives up to what Lee is doing. It's an interesting watch, though. I mean, like you said, I think if you're into Hammer and kind of want to see, like you say, that kind of final moment for them, at least until they came back in the 2000s, or you're trying to check off every one of Christopher Lee's 800 some movie roles, sure, go for it. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll hear from another one of our podcasting friends, and then we'll be back with our movie recommendations here on the Forgotten Filmcast.
You'll save money and time. You'll get the best of merchandise and service when you patronize these good neighbors. Shop with them regularly for friendly service and money-saving values.
At Cinema Recall, we want to present to you the finest in film analysis.
Yeah, like action and gore and sex.
We will look at classics by Kubrick, Lynch, Godard, De Palma, and Coppola.
I don't know who the f*** that is, but I'm looking at classic bodies of Christina Hendricks, Keanu Reeves, Salma Hayek, Ryan Reynolds.
We are a serious show for film lovers who enjoy indie foreign films, art house gems, and classic black and white features.
Well, I enjoy big budget blockbusters with great action and sexy people. Maybe our podcast can celebrate all aspects of films, like people who feel like your weird way and like people who feel like my weird way can like get together, man.
They can?
Yeah.
Huh. You know, I like that.
Cinema Recall is available everywhere you find great podcasts. Follow them on Facebook and Instagram under Cinema Recall Podcast and on Twitter at @cinema_recall.
Hi, everybody. This is Todd. Just a quick reminder that you can help support the Forgotten Filmcast through Patreon. For just a few measly, a little old dollars a month, you can support this show and earn access to some bonus features, including a bunch of the old episodes of this show that are no longer available on the main podcast feed. Visit patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast to learn more, and we thank you for your support.
We are like the Maury Povich of podcasts. People come to this show because it's a train wreck.
I'm giving this podcast 3 stars. The coast keeps yelling at me.
The people have clearly spoken. Check out Whatever with Jason Soto on Anchor, Apple, Google, wherever you get awesome podcasts, or you can go to the home location at rabbitholepodcast.com. Second thing, yes, I want to talk about is I want to talk about urination. I want to talk about peeing specifically.
See what happens when Jason throws out the segments. This is what we get instead.
We've brought back those good old time flavors, and today they're better than ever. All these delicious treats are waiting for you at the refreshment stand. Delicious fresh popcorn, ice cold cola, tasting candy you know and love. They're all ready for you now, so you won't have to miss any of the feature. Come and get them.
Okay, welcome back. It's time for our movie recommendations. This is the part of the show where each of us gets to talk a bit about another movie that we've enjoyed that we want to let everybody else know about. It could be anything. It could be a forgotten film, something new in the theaters, something on streaming, a classic, whatever you want. So, Ricky, what is your recommendation?
This one was a request from a listener from my show and wanted to know if I've ever seen this movie, and I had not. And pleasantly surprised with this one. From 1977, it's called The Farmer. You may have covered it, I don't know.
I have not covered it, but I just watched this like within the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, I was like, wow, this is actually a pretty good movie. the farmer, let's see, it's about a soldier coming back. It's right at the end of World War II. Soldier's coming back home to live the normal life. He grew up on a farm. Family is pretty much gone, but he's got the family farm, and he's trying to save it. They owe a bunch of back taxes. He don't have the money, and so it's failing. It's about to be, you know, taken away from him. And then one day, a car comes through. Car crash happens. He pulls a person out of it and saves the guy's life, and the guy kind of makes it up to him. He's a compulsive gambler. He's in pretty deep. This guy got saved from the car crash. And he also owes a bunch of money, but he tries to help our hero in this movie, or the guy has the farm, try to take care of the place. Mm-hmm. But what he ends up doing is a deal backfires on our gambler, and he hires the farmer to go and get rid of these gangsters that came and beat him up and stuff. So it's like a revenge story. And in order to pay off the farm, this is the job he has to do. And there's a love interest that happens and all that stuff. And it's, you know, here's a guy that's trying to stand on his morals, but at the end of the day, when you cross that line, you wake up John Wick, you know?
Yeah, right.
And that's kind of what you get with this. So, yeah, pleasantly surprised. I think it's a great movie. It's on Tubi. The problem with this movie is it never got a VHS release, so it kind of went vacant all those years from theater to they finally dug it out and put it out on DVD in like 2006, 2009, somewhere around in there. So it lay dormant all those years. So it's a pleasant movie to go back and revisit and go, this is not just some throwaway, you know, drive-in movie. This is actually a pretty legit movie, and it's good.
Yeah, yeah, I was impressed with it as well. It is interesting to see a movie like this where it is, like you said, kind of a revenge tale and have it be a period piece, you know, have right. it be something that's set back, you know, in an earlier era after World War II here. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of interesting stuff going on. It's a grimy, nasty little movie that does grab hold of you. I think I first heard it talked about on Quentin Tarantino's Video Archives podcast, kind of came to my attention there. And then, you know, it, like shortly thereafter, I think showed up on Tubi, and I was like, oh, there's that movie. Better check that out. So yeah, it's a good one. Well, the film that I'm going to recommend, I decided that, you know, we're talking about a Christopher Lee movie. We might as well talk about another Christopher Lee film. And this is one, it's been a long time since I watched this. I was looking back and I was like, wow, this is like one of the first movies that I covered when I started blogging before I even started the podcast. And so that's going back 12, 13 years or so ago now. But, you know, we always think about Christopher Lee's involvement with Hammer being, you know, those classic monster characters, you know, Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, things like that. And, you know, Hammer did all those different characters, you know, they hit on all the ones Universal hit on and such. But eventually it got to be where it's like, we got to do something else. We can't just keep doing Dracula all the time. And so this movie, they pulled from real life, a real life monster. So 1966, Rasputin the Mad Monk.
Oh, yeah.
Where we have Christopher Lee playing Rasputin. Now, part of what grabbed me about this movie and piqued my interest when I first saw it, I was like, oh, well, I want to see a story about Rasputin, because when I was in high school and going through history class, I still remember vividly my history teacher talking to us about Rasputin, and especially when they tried to kill Rasputin, you know, and you know, like they poisoned him and they stabbed him and they shot him and all the, and tried to drown him. And, you know, he still kept coming back and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, that's a great story. I love it. So, you know, casting Christopher Lee as Rasputin is just like, oh, well, I'm there. Oh, yeah. You know, that sounds fantastic. And Lee, of course, is perfectly cast in this. I mean, he just has that commanding screen presence, just piercing eyes in this movie. He just looks so evil. And what's interesting too, you know, as I was going back through the review that I did ages ago, and I did some research and I saw that, like Christopher Lee actually at one point met a couple of the men that were guys that tried to kill Rasputin and that whole murder plot thing. You know, I mean, Christopher Lee got around. I mean, this guy, you know, but anyway, intriguing, but it's not Dracula. It's not Frankenstein in that. It's something that's supposed to be actual history. Now, he took liberties, of course, but, you know, it's something from our actual world history. Yeah. And, you know, to see them put the Hammer spin on that with all the hallmarks of what you see in a classic Hammer production, but with a historical character, it's a lot of fun. You know, it's not your standard type of monster stuff, but to have this kind of real life historical monster, that's cool. And, yeah. And to have Christopher Lee doing that. Yeah. Just a fun flick.
Yep. Classic.
All right. Well, Ricky, I want to thank you for being on the show. Before I let you go here, please remind everybody of where they can find you and all the things you're doing out there.
Well, the Hail Ming Pow Hour and Dr. Movie are both under the same moniker. Both shows are under Legion Podcast. So if you look up Legion, type in either one of those, you'll find us. We're on every, you know, pod surface that's out there. Take your pick. We're there. Just type in either Dr. Movie or Legion Podcast or Hail Ming Pow Hour. You'll find it. And you, how many years you say you've been going now? 13? Well,
for the blog, yeah, about 10 years on the podcast. Yeah,
okay. Because so. I was trying to think. I think I'm maybe coming up on 10 years. I don't know. More, maybe 8 or so. I can't remember. I have to look. But yeah, I mean, I knew that you were kind of getting rolling, and you were a bit ahead of us for sure. But yeah, I mean, not a huge difference in time, but man, it flies by.
Hey, it's good for old guys like us to have a hobby. So. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and I'll be back to close things here in just a moment here on the Forgotten Film Cast. Well, everybody, that's going to do it for episode 217 of the Forgotten Film Cast. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to read more reviews of Forgotten Films, you can find them over at the Forgotten Films blog. That's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. You can also follow me on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter, at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z. And you can like Forgotten Films at Facebook. We welcome your questions, comments, and feedback about the show. So please email me at forgottenfilmcast@gmail.com. Don't forget about our Patreon page, patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast, where you can learn all about how you can help support this show. And I also want to mention that I was on a recent episode of the Lambcast, where we talked about some of our favorite films from the year 1967. So be sure to check out that episode as well. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again real soon.
"98% of so-called Satanists are nothing but pathetic freaks who get their kicks out of dancing naked in freezing churchyards and use the devil as an excuse for getting some sex."
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.